Hello, and welcome to another episode of GSC's podcast, and now for something completely indifferent, where we'll be discussing the hottest topics and trends in Canadian health benefits. I am the producer and editor, Sarah Murphy. Before we get started with today's episode, we would like to remind our listeners that the views expressed in this podcast are those of the individuals speaking and not necessarily the views of GSC. We may talk about possibly controversial subjects and therefore reserve the right to potentially offend some listeners, but are apologizing for it up front. You can download this podcast from our website at greenshield.ca or subscribe to it from wherever you get your podcasts. We also encourage you to read our publications, The Inside Story, Follow the Script, and GSC Talk, which you can also download from our website. And please be sure to follow the conversation on Twitter and LinkedIn. And now let's get started. Today's episode is hosted by David Willows, GSC's EVP of Digital, Innovation, and Brand Experience. Hello, David.
Hi, Sarah. So this is a summer podcast, a companion piece to our publication, Follow the Script, which is all about pharmacy benefits management. Mm-hmm. And we're going to invite back two old friends and colleagues. One, Ned Poiskich, our Vice President of Pharmacy Benefit Management. And two, his very close colleague, Layla Mandelson, who's the Manager of Pharmacy Products and Pricing. And we're going to talk about biosimilars, one of our favorite topics.
Favorites.
But has gotten sort of derailed by this thing that happened last year.
Like the pandemic? Yeah, that's it.
That's it. And has sort of, to some degree, maybe blunted the momentum that we had in the country around biosimilar adoption. But we are seeing certainly some provinces step up. And we're probably going to issue another call today for the private payer community to step up again. And we're going to get sort of an update on what was a big issue a couple of years ago. And as we emerge from this and we all get vaxxed up, what we can look forward to in the next couple of years. But before we talk to them, I want listeners to know that you're about to embark on your usual summer foray to other parts of Canada. So where are you going?
New Brunswick. We've talked about this. I go.
Have we
every
talked
summer.
About it on the pod?
Yeah, I think so on the pod.
Am I running out of material? Am I desperate?
We're heading, assuming that the provinces open up accordingly.
Last year, they did let you in last year, but
they let us in under strict conditions. We were only allowed in because we are quote unquote property owners in New Brunswick. It's where I grew up. So we have a cottage there. I wouldn't exactly call it a property, but it's a little house.
And it's and from what I remember, it's frequently underwater. You're on a floodplain.
It's subject to flooding.
A goodbye. Yes,
it didn't flood this year, so we're in good shape. Yep, it was a good year for that. And so this year, though, they're opening up the Atlantic provinces, you know, again, according if they hit their plans, to all Canadians. So we're just able to actually just enter.
You know what? We don't want to go. we will not forget who were our friends Ontario and who were just not extending the olive branch to our province.
So it was called, remember? It was
pass
called
it on. When you get there, let them know they can open their borders. We're not coming.
It was called the Atlantic bubble and it was quite smug. So we're, to any of our East Coast listeners, we kid. We love the East Coast, but the Atlantic bubble was a bit much.
You can let them know from me that I'm happy to stay in this room that I've been in for 15 months rather than visit their unwelcoming province.
That's right. Well, I'll tell them when we get there.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I hope it makes an impression there. Okay. So have a great trip. We may actually be doing some of these from down there. You've done it before, but let's talk to Ned and Layla.
Excellent.
Well, it's good to be back with both Layla and Ned from our pharmacy strategy team, no strangers to this podcast. And we're going to talk about a topic that has been one near and dear to our hearts for a number of years now, which is the introduction of biosimilars into the Canadian healthcare system and Canada's progress, and maybe specifically Canada's progress compared to other jurisdictions. And I think what we've felt is maybe slow uptake at the beginning of this journey, but we're going to sort of cut in mid-2021 and take a look and see where Canada sort of stacks up at this point, recognizing that we've had sort of a disruption in normal healthcare over the last year and a bit. And we will certainly dig into, you know, maybe how that has impacted the progress that we hope to make on this particular file. Ned, I'm going to turn to you first. You've been sort of an outspoken person in our industry, certainly an evangelist in terms of talking about biosimilars and the importance of not just them infiltrating the Canadian healthcare system for sort of efficiency, cost, and value in care, but certainly from a prior private payer landscape, trying to get some momentum on our side of the fence to take this issue perhaps more seriously. Take us back to the pre-COVID world and some of the things that you and our organization were talking about in terms of biosimilar adoption and where you felt we had gotten to, both in the system and on the private payer side in terms of biosimilar adoption.
So I love the title of outspoken evangelist. I'll take that one with honor.
That may be redundant, but I was it's a good description of your sort of role that you've played here.
Yeah, no, thank you. So pre-COVID, and even to some degree today, the challenge Canada has experienced, obviously, with biosimilars is the limited uptake, right? The first set of biosimilars in the country were approved back in late 2014, which is shocking to understand that we're talking, you know, almost 5-6 years now. And the uptake of biosimilars has always been a challenge, right? And there's been a number of different reasons for that. Physician adoption was always cited as a major problem. There have been challenges around misinformation, around the value of biosimilars, the safety of biosimilars, and more recently around biosimilar transitioning or switching. All of those compounded have really led to a very limited uptake. We'll talk a little bit, obviously, more about the changes that have occurred since, but combined, all those have put pressure sort of on uptake that has been often, in many cases, for certain molecules, been below 10% of all claims associated with that particular molecule. Below 10% has been attributable to the biosimilars. Some of those systemic challenges continue to exist to some degree today, but they have changed as well.
So, Ned, some of the barriers that we faced through those first 5 years pre-COVID, and you talk about the perception of these drugs out there, some of that was a coordinated effort to cast doubt onto these products. Would you say that that was beginning to have less impact as we approached COVID, or were there still sort of large pockets of both patient groups and perhaps payers that were influenced by the efforts of obviously the makers of originator products to cast doubt on these new products?
Yeah, so I do think that historically there's been some concerted effort to throw shade on biosimilars, right? The questions around safety, initially it was questions around safety and biosimilars in general. More recently, it was questions around safety around transitioning or switching specifically, right? So the nature of the conversation has changed. Because biosimilars were such a foreign entity in this country, some of those things and some of those doubts that were raised actually resonated with Canadian stakeholders, right?
So this is, of course, despite having sort of a long runway of use and research in Europe, for instance.
Yes, absolutely, right? So that was always the shocking part to us, was the reality that the Canadian system, the stakeholders in the Canadian system, weren't looking at that reality in Europe and other jurisdictions where they've had multiple years of successful usage of proven track record of safety and efficacy, right? So it was always a shocking aspect to us of that. Now, the reality, though, it has changed, right? It has changed over the last 5 years. And the Canadian stakeholders, what do you take physicians? Whether you take the patient organizations, whether you take the insurance industry for that matter to some degree, the acceptance of biosimilars and the conversation around biosimilars has changed dramatically. And we've done some work to sort of literally chart out position statements, public mentions, et cetera, of biosimilars. And you can almost map it, like the drastic shifts that have occurred where organizations, for example, like the Ontario Rheumatology Association, Canadian Rheumatology Association, and others have had more positions that were very cautious around biosimilars, to outright acceptance of things like biosimilars today and of biosimilar transitioning as well. So, you know, when you chart out that path, you do see a vast difference in terms of how we're our comfort level with these. And I think that to some degree that has been due to the direct experience in the Canadian context, right? The fact that these are in Canada, physicians are touching them, they're utilizing them, they're prescribing them. And then, of course, I think the biggest shift has been the efforts that the provincial governments have done. And again, I really want to applaud the government of BC as being the first provincial government in the country to boldly take that step in 2018. This is not foreign to BC, by the way. BC PharmaCare, that program has always been extremely progressive. They were some of the first to introduce the 1990s programs, which were shown to be safe and effective and reduce costs. And now they were the first to take the bold step of biosimilar transitioning. When that happened, it felt like it opened a lot of doors for a lot of other provinces to follow suit, for physicians to get comfortable, for real-world data from Canada, because that was seen as a necessary ingredient in this, to really inform all of the various groups. And, you know, now we're starting to see some better traction in the Canadian marketplace. Though I would argue, on the insurance side of things, we still have some work to do.
Okay. Now, when you're talking about BC in 2018, let's remind our listeners, are you referring to them sort of embracing biosimilars for new patients? Or are you talking even more than that around switching?
Specifically talking about switching, in the sense that most provincial governments embraced biosimilars for new starts early on, fairly early on. The switching was the major watershed policy initiative that occurred in 2018 in BC.
Okay, let me turn to Layla for a second. Layla's the pharmacist in the room. Ned can wave around his PhD all he wants, but we don't let him near patients, let's face it. Layla's actually had that hands-on experience. So Layla, when we talk about switching, which is sort of the important second conversation that we've had around biosimilars beyond new patients coming onto the drug at first take, talk about sort of the patient journey and what a patient goes through in terms of going from an originator to a biosimilar and sort of the safety valves along the way.
So switching is a very important conversation. And as you've just asked, it's a complex journey that requires a concerted effort by everyone involved to ensure successful switching or successful transitioning. When we started to look at switching and transitioning programs and what a program structure could look like, we turned to the European experience. What was very clear and evident to us was that support throughout that entire journey was crucial to ensure that transitioning was successful. Having a nurse, for example, that the patient could connect with and they could ask questions, understand what biosimilars were, understand what the implications of transitioning from a drug that they were established on and they were controlled, their disease was under control, and now they're going to switch from an originator product to a biosimilar. Of course, that raises questions for patients. Is my disease going to still be controlled after I switch? Am I going to have side effects? So having a contact person that had that clinical expertise and could hold their hands and guide them was extremely important. In for us, that was also important when we were looking at what a program could look like or how it could be developed. And what we see is that when you look at BC, they had that component as part of their transitioning. They work closely with physicians and so pharmacists as well. So the transitioning process is crucial. So I guess to answer your question more directly, what does transitioning look like from the patient? So it really looks like having an initial conversation to talk about you're on treatment, you're established, and now we're asking you to switch to a different product. And so the question that comes up is, so why? Why do I need to switch? And of course, why would a patient switch to a different product? It's the same conversation that happens with brand and generic products. So it's same efficacy, same health outcomes, your disease is going to be controlled, but it's a lower cost and it generates savings that can be reinvested in other healthcare services that are available to patients. So that conversation is important as a starting point. And then it becomes a little bit more of a practical conversation. Okay, so what do I need to do to transition? And so what they need to do looks very different depending on whether it's a infused biologic, for example, or whether it's a subcutaneous injection that the patient can self-administer. The difference there is that when it's infused, you have to bring in the clinic where the patient is going. It is possible that they may need to switch clinics. They were going to one clinic to get their originator. Now they have to go to a different clinic. So you have to engage the pharmacy to secure the new product. You have to get a new prescription from the prescriber because these are not interchangeable products like brand and generics. So the pharmacist can't simply substitute. As you can see, it's a complex journey that requires multiple stakeholders. And so when implementing a switching program or framework, it's important to have all those pieces in place with the support readily available for the patient.
So which provinces have gone there now? It's not just BC, right?
It's BC, Alberta, New Brunswick has announced, and Quebec has announced. So we have four provinces.
Is it inevitable that all the provinces are going there now? It's just a matter of time?
I would say yes. I cannot see a province not going there. There's just no real good reason not to.
Just to add, yeah, in Ontario, as a province, had every indication to move forward in February 2020. It was published and sort of, you know, widely circulated that there was a decision made to move forward in Ontario. But subsequently, you know, due to COVID, they've delayed that timeline, and it hasn't been announced as to when the new implementation timeline will be.
Okay. Eventually, the provinces are going to go there. Is this more of a sign that the originator's work in trying to sort of keep that piece of the market, is that sort of a fading effort now, as sort of like, okay, they did their best to try to hold on, but the momentum of history is now taking over? Or are they still sort of actively trying to keep that market share through different means?
I think the efforts to sort of undermine, I guess, if you will, biosimilar market in Canada, or maybe even more innocuously, just to say, to continue to hold on to a market share, right, have changed, have really morphed over the years. They were more direct efforts to talk about the safety of biosimilars. They subsequently have led to a tacit coexistence with biosimilars, to questioning around the efficacy and safety of switching, to more recently acceptance that switching is here to stay, to some kind of advocacy for coexistence framework, if you will, that provides a certain level of market share for originators and a continued adoption of biosimilars as well. What I think is kind of interesting as well is that despite a lot of these moves by provincial governments, and certainly, you know, there's still some of this has yet to be realized. If you look at some of the latest data on, let's say, the big largest molecule, obviously, which is Remicade or Infliximab, the market share of the biosimilar still has not penetrated 10%, right? As an overall proportion of all claims going through for that. So we're making strides. We've moved forward from that 1% or whatever it was several years ago, but there's still a long way to go. Now, with all the different efforts by provinces, when they complete their switching programs, we should start to see that number tick upwards. But this is very unprecedented, because typically when you have a generic version of a product that comes to market, the brand goes down to virtually 0%. Maybe somewhere around 5-7% is a common market share for the originator. Here we are 5 years post the entry of biosimilars, and the originator has 85-90%, continues to have 85-90% market share. So clearly the dynamics of this market are completely different than the generic market. And we'll yet to see where all this settles, right?
So the public payers are sort of falling in line. We think there's inevitable momentum that will be the chosen course in terms of biosimilars going forward. So in the end, is it sort of us private payers that have the work to do now, that have the farthest road to go?
Yes, I would argue that from a pure policy concordance perspective, if we want to be aligned with what provinces are doing, which I think is a very important measure by which we need to judge ourselves in the insurance industry, is if we're all rowing in the same direction and trying to establish the same principles, follow the same high-level goals, which is a viable biosimilar market, usage of these products to continue to get new biosimilars, to continue to create sustainable options, then I think we need to be concordant with public drug plans on this one, right? And it begs sort of a bigger question, I think, which we, I think, in the insurance industry have to ask ourselves directly, which is, are we part of Canada's healthcare system? Because if we're part of Canada's healthcare system, then we'd be, again, consistent with what the publicly funded healthcare system is trying to do as an overarching long-term objective. This context, that is a viable biosimilar market and savings attributable to that market. So, and in not engaging in short-termism, but engaging in sort of long-term strategic thinking. So I think there's work to do there. Again, encouraging steps are happening. Lots of insurers have announced policies, for example, to follow in line with what BC has done and others. But continued work here does need to take place.
Okay. So we certainly, I mean, I would say we were sort of out in front at the beginning a number of years ago in talking about this. We have seen some of our compatriots sort of fall in line. Some have done so more than others. What do you think in the end is stopping the private payers from just jumping on the public bandwagon? What's the hesitancy in 2021, do you think?
Some of the similar themes that occur that have pervaded over the last 5 years continue to be in place. I think that there is perhaps a reluctance to cause patient noise, or, you know, some of those aspects. I think there's questions around, you know, patient experience that are concerning for some folks. I do think that some of those concerns should be less evident, or should be less real today in a climate where massive provincial drug plans with thousands of patients are doing this and causing and creating sort of the necessary movement at the physician and other level. Nevertheless, that notion does continue to exist. I think that the other piece, of course, is maybe a focus on the just bottom line, right? Which is that, look, if I can get the exact same savings through a negotiated agreement, then what's the impetus for me to, in fact, engage in this, right? Yeah. That still is on top of people's minds. So some of those factors, I think, combined are continuing to cause a bit of a, you know, status quo in the private insurance industry.
Where are patient groups on this now? Because certainly we heard some very virulent opposition to us talking about this a number of years ago. What kind of journey have they been on the last 5 years as we have more and more experience in Canada, even to the degree of switching, and really no adverse outcomes that we're aware of?
So what we've seen with the patient groups is that very much like we've seen in the industry in general, which is they're starting to come along, right? They're coming to the side of, we recognize that biosimilars have a role to play. They're safe, they're effective, they deliver the same health outcomes. The way I would characterize it today is there still seem to be, I would call them pockets of patient groups that are still very much opposed to transitioning. But I would say it's just a smaller group of patient organizations. What I've seen recently, the messaging that I'm seeing is they're positioning it as this is not a good thing to do during COVID or during a pandemic. And so I guess, you know, as we come out of this pandemic, I would be really interested to see how that messaging may or may not change. I would hope that it does shift to welcoming transitioning, because I'm not sure what other arguments there would be at this point to really flat out oppose transitioning. But I would say the large majority of the patient groups have come on board.
Okay.
You know, the challenge for any organization continuing to try to resist the safety of biosimilar transitioning is really post the BC experience. And the BC has published some very interesting data that shows that all of the various arguments which have existed that were potential concerns for switching have really been proven to be rendered irrelevant, right? So they've showed, for example, patients going through switching have no increased use of ER visits, physician visits, hospital visits, no increased usage of any other aspect of the healthcare system that would be suggestive of a worsening condition. That's powerful. You're talking about a massive province-wide transition showing on a population level not to have any negative adverse effects. It creates a very powerful argument.
Yeah. And I guess not surprising given that Europe was 10 years ahead of us and had similar research, I would imagine.
Exactly. But I think we had to show it in Canada, and now we have.
Absolutely. Absolutely. In terms of the pipeline for biosimilars, obviously we have underperformed up till now in getting adoption. We see some positive momentum specifically on the public payer side, and we see patient groups and doctors groups coming along, which is all terrific. What's the even more compelling case in terms of the pipeline of what's to come? Is there sort of even more opportunity given the new drugs that are coming?
Yeah, so there's a number of molecules that we're watching. You know, I think obviously we were all watching out for Humira. That's here today. So that's certainly a tremendous opportunity. When you look at the two biologics with the most sales in Canada, that's Remicade and Humira, they both have biosimilars now available. So, you know, that is an opportunity that it's here today to generate savings. When we start to look at what else is coming down the pipeline, we're seeing things like, for example, we're monitoring Lucentis, which is an eye injection, a biologic drug that is injected in the eye. We're seeing things like Solaire for asthma, for example. We're seeing development for other biologics in the inflammatory conditions like Actemra. There's several, quite a few that are in development, and they certainly have a fair bit of market share or utilization, I should say. We're watching them closely. Biosimilar market is only going to continue to grow. So it's a tremendous opportunity ahead.
Okay. So for private plans and for the system as a whole, we're not running out of opportunities to bring efficiencies.
Not at all. There's lots of opportunity to continue adding drugs. Even some of the drugs, in fact, when you look at some of the current originators that are starting to rise in utilization, you know, some of the examples, Stelara, it's rising in utilization. There's biosimilars under development for that drug. So as soon as that patent expires and a biosimilar enters the market, that's another tremendous opportunity for savings.
Terrific. I want to thank you both for coming back on. I think it was a good sort of catch up on where we're at. We probably have a better news story than we did three or four years ago. And obviously, as we emerge from COVID, really sort of the barriers that are up inside the healthcare system, and you know, you can understand some hesitancy to drag people through the healthcare system during COVID, a lot of those barriers will disappear and we'll have to sort of redouble our efforts to get this sort of very straightforward and simple healthcare system efficiency into place. So thanks again for bringing us up to date. Great seeing you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you to our listeners for tuning in to another episode of And Now for Something Completely Indifferent, a Canadian health benefits industry podcast. To be sure to get future episodes, please subscribe to this podcast wherever you get your podcasts, or visit our website at greenshield.ca and head over to the blog to download. As a reminder, we talk about these issues consistently in our publications, which are available on our website as well as on social media. So be sure to follow the conversation. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk again soon.